a public service announcement with guitar. Know your rights. All three of them. Number one.
Welcome once again to the Voice of the People with me, Des Butler, and Paul O'Hara. As usual, I'm in the studio and Paul is out and about interviewing. This is the final show on the issue of homelessness here in Preston, and this week Paul is talking to a senior police officer and two volunteer outreach workers. So it's over to you, Paul. Where are you?
Welcome, everyone. It's Thursday, the 10th of September, and I'm with Inspector Jill Halliwell at the new Police Operations Centre on Lancaster Road North. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Could you explain to me, first of all, what exactly your job is and your general responsibilities?
Yes, I'm Preston City Centre Geographic Inspector, which means that my responsibility is to look after the general policing of Preston City Centre and some residential areas surrounding the city centre. And basically that means I have to use my resources on a daily basis to tackle the problems that are occurring at the time. And also meet the needs of the local communities, what their problems, what they tell us are their problems are. So it's very varied.
Every day is extremely broad,
and every day brings a new challenge, really.
What is the present policing policy, then, for dealing with the people who are homeless in Preston?
It's very, very wide-ranging. We work with all the other agencies in Preston. We are one of the agencies that is involved in the homeless strategy.
And you go to all the forum meetings.
To the forum meetings, absolutely. And again, talking about short-term, medium-term, long-term, our ultimate aim is to work with the other agencies to get homelessness down to a minimum in Preston. Because, as with criminals, what our ultimate aim is for the people that are homeless or the criminals, obviously two separate sets of people. Our ultimate aim is to get them on the right road, if you like, and get them settled in a home and get them happy and you know, sorted
empowered
out, really.
Empowering their own lives.
Empowering their own lives. Our aim isn't to arrest people or to move people on or anything like that. Our aim is to get those people back on the feet, working with the other agencies. Obviously, as police, our job is to enforce the law and to keep peace within Preston City Centre and allow Preston City Centre to be somewhere people come and they see a nice, tidy, clean city, and when they're shopping or they're going to the car parks or walking about, they actually feel safe and reassured. We don't harass homeless people or really have a great deal of dealings with people unless we get a call from the public saying that they're causing a problem or they're in an area where we've had complaints from businesses that may complain about homeless people or beggars or people that sort of gathering in an area and they're intimidating other people or they're drinking or they're causing problems. So we don't go actively seeking out homeless people to harass them, which I think is probably a common misconception.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2, the voice of the people.
Some of the homeless people are saying that.
Sure.
I mean, this seems to be on the increase as well, isn't it? Certain other businesses now, as Preston Town Centre is being more renovated, more investment is made, the tolerance levels for this small group of homeless people that actually, you know, exist in the Preston Town Centre, they would say that they are getting more, so there's more complaints are being made to the police, and the homeless people are saying to me that they are receiving more sort of moving on instructions or more harassment.
Well, I think the issue for us is that we, as well as getting crimes coming in on a daily basis, I also review antisocial behaviour calls that come in every day, and I look at every single one of those as well. And we get complaints from the public about people who are... It's difficult to encompass homeless people and beggars within the same, because not all homeless people beg, but we certainly get complaints from the public about certain people gathering in areas, maybe on drugs, maybe consuming alcohol, and maybe intimidating. For example, somebody may be sleeping on the multi-storey car park. Perhaps a lady on her own at night comes back to get in her car and might feel intimidated or fearful if somebody shouts abuse or says anything or is
or
drunk,
in fact just wakes up.
Or just, or just in fact wakes up.
Yeah.
So we have to... The balance for us is quite difficult because we are really conscious of the human side of working with the other agencies and really helping homeless people, and that is our ultimate aim, to get people back on the, you know, as you said, to empower their own lives and get them off the streets. But we also have to enforce the law, and if the public are complaining of intimidation or fear or antisocial behaviour, then we have to deal with that.
Right.
Because that's our duty, that's our fundamental duty, to make the streets of Preston safe, okay, and make people feel safe. So we do move people on if they're in a situation where people are suffering those consequences. It hasn't increased.
Do you think it's... I know this is what the feedback
of,
is. That
the level of calls is probably one of our biggest problems in the city centre. It's probably the most prolific problem in terms of antisocial behaviour within the city centre. The amount of calls we get reflects that.
Right.
I'd say it was reducing, if anything, because of the things we've got in place with the other agencies. So that's, if you like, the negative side of what we do, because we have to do that because that's our fundamental role. It's to keep the peace, maintain the Queen's peace, and make people feel safe and reassured within Preston City Centre. We also do a great deal with the other agencies, and we also do a great deal to help homeless people in terms of operations we've run, multi-agency operations we've run, where we've provided support, we've provided clothing, clean-up kits, grooming kits, and advice. If we come across a homeless person, we give them information about how they can, the agencies that they can access to help them. We're very conscious of, we've referred people into different agencies, we've referred people to Fox Street. We work with the Emmaus Project, the Recycling Lives Project. We go to regular meetings with these agencies through Fox Street. So we constantly work with the agencies to try and get people to work with those agencies to get them off the street.
Now it comes to the songs that you have chosen. Can you tell me the first song that you would like to play and why exactly?
Yes, I am a child of the 80s. Well, that was my era. I'm not a child of the 80s. I'm a child of the 60s, and my era was the 80s, so... The first song I've chosen, because it's fairly connected to the homeless problem, is Another Day in Paradise by Phil Collins.
Brilliant, yes.
And that just reminds us maybe how lucky we all are.
Trying.
Oh,
So the policies and that you have at the moment, do you think they're working?
I think they are, for many, many people. As we've discussed already, there'll be people that, you know, just won't engage.
Yeah.
And they're difficult. We're not in the business, and neither of the other agencies we work with are forcing anything on anybody.
You can't.
We're not allowed to. And there'll always be people that won't access those services and won't engage with people. And as I've said, it's just a case of being there and having that contact with them. Hopefully one day they may want to change and want to understand, you know, they've had problems in the past and they may be addicted to drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
And that's their primary aim in life, is to form that habit and
right.
to, you know, kill whatever pain they may have, etc. So all we can do is keep engaging with them and supporting them as best we can.
Yeah.
But there will always be those people. But say, is it working? Then it obviously is working, because there are cases where, several cases I can think of, where people have been referred to Recycling Lives or referred to Fox Street,
yeah.
who goes to the Foxton Centre, have actually, you know, rebuilt their lives, and that is just so heartwarming. That is exactly what we all want.
Yes, indeed.
And that is working. So it is working.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear to be working in some cases, when we still get the antisocial behaviour calls coming in.
Yeah.
And people still feel intimidated, but that's our role.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
Now, the last radio programme we had, we spoke to some of the homeless people, and there were some claims, and we actually said, that was the last thing we said on the radio programme,
mm-hmm.
that we would, you know, ask yourselves if it's the case. We were told by some of the homeless people that over the last few months, 5 homeless people have died, 3 in the car parks in Preston Town Centre and 2 in Avenham Park. Is mm-hmm. there any is there any truth to those claims at all?
No, absolutely not. There's no truth in those claims at all.
Because you would know, wouldn't you? Because
absolutely. As we've discussed before, every incident, every crime, every
yeah.
incident I review every day, and I'm not aware of any deaths at all.
Right.
Of homeless people within Preston City Centre in the last few months.
So even if they were in a shelter or in a tent or a sleeping bag, the first people that would be called on that for that incident would be the police, wouldn't it?
Yes.
And
definitely.
Everything would be logged and you'd know about it.
Absolutely. If it happens in my geographic area or
yeah.
within the division, central division, which covers Preston and the surrounding area, then we would be called to a death.
Yeah.
Particularly a death out of doors. We go to all deaths out of doors.
And do a full investigation.
And do a full investigation.
Right.
So we also go to all coroner's deaths.
Yeah.
So there's no question that is correct.
Well, Jill, that was a great interview. Thank you very much for that.
And the lights are flashing on your window.
Thanks to Jill Halliwell for the interview and for her choice of music, Another Day in Paradise by Phil Collins and Save a Prayer by Duran Duran. Now I'm going to be asking Paul a couple of questions and get some stats from him. Here we are in the studio and I have with me Paul. Not seen you for a while. What have you been up to?
Well, for the last 5 minutes, Des, since I've last seen you, I managed to find some statistics with respect to the homeless people. And I think you're about to ask me some questions on it, aren't you?
Yeah, what sort of stats have you got and where are they from?
Well, this is from it's from Crisis, which is the national charity for single homeless people in the UK. And they're dedicated to ending homelessness by delivering life-changing services and campaigning. The actual organisation itself was set up in 1971. And for those of you who want to check, you know, further information, it's www.crisis.org.uk. It started in London. I think it was originally called Crisis at Christmas. Basically, they used to, a few volunteers managed to get an empty church, and so they first of all initially just set up giving food and help and everything else to the homeless people in London, and it's just grown from that.
Excellent.
So it's now a national charity.
Have you got any other stats from them?
Yes, well, there's some very, very pertinent points here, and it's quite sad really, but basically under this one section where it says why do people become and stay homeless, they're saying that the main cause of homelessness is relationship breakdown with family and partners. One in four ex-homeless people also find themselves unable to sustain a tenancy. Loneliness and isolation are main causes, often compounded by a lack of choice about where they can live.
Right.
And the other thing is they're saying that only 2% of homeless people are in full-time employment and 12% work part-time. And over 50% of homeless people have been unemployed for 3 years or more, yet 77% of homeless people would like to work now, and most have worked at some point in the past.
These aren't necessarily homeless that sleep on the streets, though, are they? They might be homeless that are sharing a settee or whatever overnight, or just, you know, just staying at their friends when they can.
Absolutely. One of the other sections on the Crisis website is that they have a question where it says, what is hidden homelessness?
All right.
The problem of homelessness is much bigger than rough sleeping. As the government itself stated in a report of 2003, the vast majority of homeless people are actually families or single people who are not literally sleeping on the streets, but living with relatives and friends or in temporary accommodation. Crisis estimates that there are around 400,000 such hidden homeless people in Great Britain.
That's quite a number.
It is indeed, yeah. They exist out of sight in hostels and refuges, bed and breakfasts, squats, unsatisfactory or overcrowded accommodation, and on the floors or sofas of friends and families.
Right.
That's a thing, you know, yeah. people have called them, what is it? Sofa surfers.
Sofa surfers, yeah.
Yeah. The fact that the majority do not sleep rough means that they are all too often invisible to the public, and are often not regarded as a priority or a statistic for the decision makers.
Right.
There are estimated to be between 40 and 50,000 people in hostels and other supported accommodation for homeless people in England. Some night-by-night shelters, others people may stay for 6 months to 2 years or longer. But one in five hostel residents first set foot in a hostel over a decade ago.
For now, Paul, can we leave it there? But before we go, I'm going to talk to you later on anyway.
Yeah.
What's the web address for Crisis again?
Yeah, it's www.crisis.org.uk.
Okay, right, I'll speak to you in a bit.
Brilliant. Cheers, Daz.
See you.
That was a tongue-in-cheek number by DBX entitled Lord Have Mercy. And now it's back to Paul, who's out and about. Where are you, Paul?
Oh, well, welcome, everyone. And it is Wednesday, the 9th of August, and I have with me Dave and Sarah. Hi, Dave. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. They are both voluntary outreach workers with people who are homeless in Preston. So, Dave and Sarah, exactly what is it that you do and stuff like that?
Basically, what we do is we go out onto the streets on Wednesdays and Friday nights, and we take flasks of soup and bread. We collect clothing, and we go out and we see people on the streets, and we give out food and we give out bread.
How long have you been doing that? Sorry,
it's since about September 2006.
Right.
In the winter. It's basically started off as just myself, just going out with one flask, and I just went out on the streets and just gave out soup, as simple as that. It was just simply giving out soup and giving out something to eat, and I'm talking to people and seeing how they are, and I'm building up a relationship with people who are on the streets, and basically finding out people's needs as well, and if we can help in any way, because I felt that there wasn't that kind of help that was available.
Yeah.
And so what happened is that a group of us decided we'd go out there, we'll do this, and it started off on Wednesday nights, collecting clothes from family, collecting, buying soup with our dole money, going out there and self-funding ourselves.
So you don't have much money yourself then?
No, we're just on the dole. So basically we support ourselves by doing it.
So the small amount of money you get, you actually use a part of that to buy the soup, the bread, and the actual flasks and everything else you need, blankets or whatever. You use that in order to try and give that to the homeless themselves.
Yeah, that's right. My family's been great because, you know, you ask your brother if he's got a jumper or something like that. So we collect clothes and things like that from family and friends. But mainly, we self-fund ourselves.
So you don't belong to any other organisation?
No, no organisation.
In some way, does that give you the freedom then to... Because then you're not, I take it, answerable to any hierarchical bureaucratic body.
Yeah.
Does that then give you more of the freedom to be able to go into places which they probably are not able to because of health and safety or risk assessment? Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. We're not tied down to bureaucratic rules or, as you say, the health and safety red tape. And also that gives us also, it levels the playing field. We don't have the hierarchical structure. It's not us and them. It's another human being helping another person out on the streets.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, I've also been on the streets myself, so I don't see myself...
You've been homeless yourself.
Yeah, I don't see myself any different to people on the streets. It's just helping another person out.
Right.
And that comes across because the first thing that they ask you, people ask you on the streets, is who you're with, which church are you with?
Yeah.
And when you say to them, like, I'm with no church, I'm just on the dole, I'm just helping out because I've been there myself.
Yeah. Does that bridge the gap?
Yeah, it breaks down the barriers instantly. Yeah. And there's suddenly like there's comradeship, there's solidarity,
there's trust.
There's bringing together, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important because of the organisational structures. They can't do that because of the fact that people have been abused by the system or abused somewhere along the way, all these different tales that each person has on the streets by an organisation or a church or etc.
Yeah.
We don't have all that stigma.
You don't really have many agendas or whatever.
We don't have any agendas.
Sorry, go on, Sarah. Sarah.
It stops like the homeless people thinking they're just there to fill a tally. It stops. It's not. We're not just doing it because we've got a number to fill and something to achieve. We're just doing it.
You're doing it for just purely compassionate and humanistic reasons.
Yeah, if you can help out a little bit without having a target to fill, that's better than...
And do you think that's one of the problems that a lot of the other bodies, be them the Foxton Centre or the Fox Street Shelter or the Salvation Army and...
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I feel that, like any organisation, it's usually set up with a purpose in mind, but eventually it gets to the point where it has to self-perpetuate itself, and therefore it concentrates on its own survival without actually losing focus of why it was set up in the first place.
Right.
And this is what we find when we talk to people on the streets, is that a lot of these organisations seem to have forgotten why they set up in the first place.
Yeah.
And therefore they don't come out, and they don't come and they feel like they are more hindrance than they are more help in some ways.
So in some way, what you're saying, sorry Sarah, were you going to say something about that?
Maybe I think like the people that might work as individuals in those organisations want to help, but because of, you can't go out on a Friday night, just two of you, they wouldn't be able to do that.
They wouldn't be allowed to.
They wouldn't, no. So they do get hindered by the very fact that they are an organisation.
Yeah.
And especially if it's a charity organisation, the funding is a massive issue for them.
Yeah.
So they get hindered and bogged down by that.
Yeah. So. Because they have to, as it were, they have, what's the word for it, a responsibility to the people, and they have to adhere to certain principles and rules for the body of people that they work for. Yeah. But then, of course, I suppose in a way, they have to be there because the Fox Street Shelter or the Foxton Centre or the Salvation Army or the Recycling Lives, they are doing good for a certain group of people.
Mm-hmm.
But with the group of people that you're working with, that particular facility and sort of structure, it's not conducive to working, is it, on the streets as an outreach worker.
No,
so do you think there's any other, is there any professional body or, as it were, funded body within Preston that actually does go out and do outreach work? Is there anything?
Well, sometimes we see on the streets when we're out about that the churches come out. I think there's one called Restoring Lives. They come out and they do a bit of outreach and give out a bit of food, but they are... Very rarely we see these. Very rarely we see any other organisation coming out.
Right.
I know that there are models in places like in London. There's the London Coalition Against Poverty that fights for people's housing rights and so on. And they actually go out and they help people. And I remember being homeless myself, and the Salvation Army used to come out with their soup wagons.
Yeah.
You know, you used to know where a van would be, and you come and pick your sandwiches up and so on like that.
You're listening to Preston FM 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
Why do you think that stopped?
Because a policy of moving people into buildings. They don't want people to be visible on the streets collecting sandwiches and things like that. It's a policy of, we want you in a building, whether we go to
it's almost like containment.
Yeah,
containment role.
But then that fails because there are people that don't want anything to do with that part of it. So then they're falling through the net that way.
Right.
So there needs to be many alternatives
to
catch people that don't want to go that path or go that path or that path.
Yeah.
And that's, in fact, that's what we do. That we offer another way, another alternative. And we also offer a model of where people, a simple thing, where people can go out and do it themselves. You know, it'd be great if someone came out on Tuesdays or came out on Thursdays.
I take it people are frightened to do that, do you think? Do they feel as if it's... I would imagine when you first started doing it a few years ago in 2006, when you were doing it on your own, did you find it quite vulnerable sometimes yourself? Things, certain fears you had to face yourself?
Yeah, at first, it was difficult, but you get over it. You have to... you start very small, because at the beginning, I would just basically go out and see a few people. But nowadays, it's a case that we see lots
people
of people. Yeah.
Where we start, what time we start. And of course, if they meet somebody that would need that help too, they tell them.
Yeah.
By the way, we'll come here on a Friday night at 7 o'clock, 7:15, then they'll be there.
Right.
So I think it snowballs once you get known.
And once you've built that trust up and that. Yeah.
Right. Once people know you haven't got an agenda as well, you're not going to try and make them do something they don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's just a chat and a cup of soup.
And some support.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed. How do you then... Are the other bodies, like the Fox and Centrum, are they aware of the work that you do?
Yeah.
The Methodist Church and the Salvation Army, are they...
Well, we did go to the Action Methodist Church up in Ashton.
Yeah.
It was the homeless forum, and we spoke to Greg at the Salvation Army and Tim at the Fox, and they said, oh, they will come out with us, but we've never seen them, so...
And what I'm trying to get to is, what kind of a relationship is it then that you have with with these other bodies, these professional organised bodies?
Some of them said that they respected what we did, but they wouldn't be able to do it themselves. A lot of them were like, yeah, that it does need to happen, where just people go out and talk and know the problems without having to answer to a massive organisation. But then they're still part of the organisation, so they're still bogged down themselves by it.
But then wouldn't it be conducive for them to be able to, seeing you're on the street and you've got that, whereas they can't, as we've and we understand why, would it be not conducive for them to be able to communicate with you on a direct basis?
Yeah.
Do you have their phone numbers and do you communicate?
Yeah, we do. And
do you have, what I'm saying is about this feedback.
Yeah, sort of. They have their forum on the internet and so on. Greg spoke about it when you interviewed him. He's setting up the homeless forum, and we've invited people to come out and come out with us and find. But it's never happened. So
why do you think that is?
I don't know personally. Okay. Personally, I don't know, and we just carry on with what we're doing.
I know it won't prevent you from, but obviously, what you would like to see, because you've been doing it now a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the situation has improved, or do you think the situation is getting worse?
I think it...
With respect to facilities and help for the people that are homeless in Preston?
It depends, because each person on the streets has their own issues.
Unique issues. Yeah.
Yeah, and each solution or whatever the thing that's been offered as a solution for... The group called the homeless will help some people, but will be no good for others.
Right.
So, in some ways, as we were saying earlier about offering an alternative or another way of doing things
for a different group of homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they can do so. The Foxton Centre or the Recycling Lodge, they can deal with one group of people who are ready. And have the capacity to be able to go back in the long term, as it were, to recycle their lives so they can get work and their own home and empower themselves.
Uh-huh.
They have the mental and physical capacity to do that. I take it you're saying there is another group of people who are not equipped to do that, and they've been, in the long term, they've been, as it were, homeless.
Yeah.
They seem to be left out of the loop in some ways.
Yeah, they're what we... Well, I would class as the excluded from society.
Right.
They're the people that are like, again, in your last radio program, Debbie spoke about the refugees and the displaced.
Oh, the displaced people.
These are the displaced people. Right. These are the result of the system that we live in. These are people that have been basically...
Marginalised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marginalised by the system.
Yeah.
And... whatever thing that the system offers, these people who are displaced, they're never going to come running back to that.
Because that there's always conditions.
Yeah.
So they will help, but there will be conditions that this other group of people who are totally marginalised and displaced, they, in order for them to get the help, there is a condition that they have to reciprocate in some way or go through a particular procedure or process, which, of course, they're not being stubborn. It's just they don't have the capacity in order to do that. And because they don't, then they are forgotten about, are they? Or?
I wouldn't say the capacity. I would say that they've just been like ground into the ground by the whole grinding of the system. You know the saying of "Don't let the system grind you down."
Yeah.
Well, this is what's happened.
Yeah.
The people that we see and. Basically, they need help. And whatever happened, that trigger that happened long time ago
in their own lives,
these people just need help. And what we're seeing is they don't need to be sieving through recycling. They don't need to be pushed under the carpet or moved on around the streets. They genuinely need help.
What kind of help?
Again, it's all down to the uniqueness of their individual problems.
What do you think, Sarah? What kind of help do you think they really need?
Depends on who it is.
It's all this unique.
Yeah, it depends on which person you're about. And I think they need help in more than one part of their lives. It's just...
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Sarah, which particular song would you like us to play for you then?
I would like you to play Fugazi, Waiting Room.
Fugazi Waiting Room. And why exactly have you chosen that one?
Firstly, it's a very good song. And secondly, what Fugazi stand for is
in
very
principle.
Much so. Yeah, very in principle, look after others and... Yeah.
All the things we've been talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
Very fantastic. That's great. We should play that one. So, Sarah, can you tell me, how do you find the, seeing you go out on a Wednesday and Friday, how do you find the general public are with respect to the homeless themselves? Are they frightened or are they...
I think there's two different responses. They either switch their mind off and don't want to think about it and just walk past, ignoring the problem, because if they don't want to think about it, they don't feel guilty.
Yeah, so it's not like it's not there.
People want it to not be there. They don't want to see that people don't have what they have. And, like, also, people might feel pretty powerless to help them. And they think, well, I can't help every single homeless person, so why should I give money to one and not the other? And especially sometimes if you walk through town and you see three or four people and you think, I can't help every single one.
Yeah.
Just Joe Bloggs walking down the street can't. So I think that's probably why they do turn off and they choose not to think about it. But I think the reason why people who might want to help, they don't want to go up and walk around the street at night. It is intimidating sometimes, but if you do it with people you know, then you tend to be okay. But I can see why people would be intimidated and prevented from going out.
Because a lot of the homeless also have dogs, don't they?
Yeah, and I think when... I can see how why it would be intimidating, like a big group of homeless people, three or four dogs barking away. I can see why that would be a very scary group to then walk up to. Yeah.
But then they need the dogs, because the thing is, where would we, from certainly the general public, probably finds, you know, some of the homeless people with their dogs intimidating. From the perspective of the homeless person who sleeps on their own, the reason they have the dog is that they are, in reality, intimidated, aren't they?
Yeah.
They protect, that's their protection, isn't it, in some way?
Yeah, yeah.
We've been there enough times when they've been beaten up by drunks, leaving a pub, just three or four men, drunk men, will set about a homeless person. I mean, I've been there when Tony or Lee, sorry, two of them have had mouth, like, cuts in their mouth because they've been kicked and beaten.
Yeah. While they were sleeping.
Yeah. And that's... I can see why they have the dogs, and I don't judge them
for that. It's a protection for them.
Yeah. But I also, I do see, like, a woman that might want to go out...
Yeah.
...has been told by the media all the time not to go out unnecessarily at night. If you do go out, get a taxi everywhere. So I can see why they wouldn't want to approach a group of men...
Yeah.
...with a bad reputation already... And try and help, because it scared us. Rule a lot of people.
Yeah. Fear. And of course, when you're, because I take it you spend a lot of time. It's not just about giving soup and bread, is it? I mean, you actually spend time sitting with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Asking them what their week's been like, and
they're our friends. In fact, so because we've built the relationship with people, and so. We want to know if they're all right. How's their week been? And, you know, have you had any trouble? And, you know, is there anything we can get? Whether it's like first aid and so on like that. So, yeah, basically they're our friends. So
if you walk through town on any other night, you stop and say hello, even if you don't have soup.
Yeah. Oh, you see, as you're walking through town, you go and say,
stop and have a chat, and that's. Good, because you get a better picture of
and
who that
some
person
way,
is.
And it's quite visible as well, isn't it? It's not like it's round the corner. Obviously, the lads, in order to try and get some money, they sit in certain places, don't they, where it's got the maximum visibility and where the most people... So in some way, by you doing that, I take it you're also, as an example to others, as they're walking past, you're saying, in order, I suppose, in a way... And I'm not saying you're doing it deliberately, but... You're trying to, in some way, dispel some of these fears.
Yeah, yeah, just showing that...
They are human beings.
Yeah, definitely, and sitting down and just talking, just sitting down and talking, you know, like, for instance, talk about different bands or, you know, talking, because you're friends, so you talk about various things, don't you? And
you're listening to Preston FM on 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by them.
Is it different each week as well? Every time you go out, is it like a different set of circumstances and everything?
Yeah, definitely. Depending on what's happened during the week. Depends what kind of would dictate what's going to happen during the soup run.
And usually someone's got something to get off their chest.
Yeah.
They want to talk to someone about.
So you're also doing counselling as well?
I wouldn't term it counselling, but like you say, it's just a friend. Yeah. Sometimes you need to have a rant to a friend about something that's happened that week.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happens. I mean, we're not trying to solve every single problem by just sitting down and having a chat, but it is just someone to talk to.
Yeah.
So they know that they are actually... It sounds cheesy, but they are actually a human rather than just someone that's homeless. So.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Somebody's got some time for them and they are appreciated.
Yeah, and that's another like important thing of actually going out and speaking to people, and because there is that avenue. Also, we've got some resources that they haven't got. So you can, you know, like the old thing with trade unions, with... Mackenzie Men, advocacy. You could go to the housing advisory and sit with them and go through and help with, because it's all paperwork and so on. So you're there also just as a bit of moral support, because if people, because the system is...
Because you've been to court with a few of them, haven't you?
Yeah, been to court. We've been to hospital, we've been to housing, we've been... been different places with people.
What is your relationship then with the police and things like that with respect to... Do you manage to... Are you able to talk with them? Because obviously they must be aware of the work that you do. Are they aware of the work that you do? They know that you go out.
They've seen us out.
Yeah, they've seen us out. In some ways...
Is it a healthy dialogue between the two of you?
No,
there's no dialogue between us because all the time it seems that every time I see the police, they're either moving people on or... And the way that they do it is just so... just
inhumane?
Well, yeah, they don't care about where they go, even. They just say, no, you just have to move from here.
They're not... So their particular job isn't to find solutions. Their particular job is just to...
They don't see it as the police don't think they're there to find a solution. They're just there to keep order.
To uphold the law.
Yeah. And they think there'll be another...
And protect the general public.
Well, to protect pubs and businesses, mostly, on a weekend.
That's what laws are about, property, aren't they?
Yeah.
Protecting property.
If a manager of Wetherspoons, for example, rings the police, they will be there.
Because a lot of the homeless actually congregate outside Greyfriars.
The police have a massive problem with that, the fact that they are there. And it is Wetherspoons. I know for a fact that they ring up constantly and complain about it.
Yeah.
Because there's a group of people out there that they perceive as being negative for the business.
Yeah.
Where in actual fact, people will go to Wetherspoons whether they're there or not.
Yeah.
They're just as busy when there's a group of homeless people outside.
Yeah.
And people just ignore them. They do ignore the homeless people. Like, a few of them might look at the dogs or something, and maybe a few of them will give a couple of quid, but they will still go into the pub.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. And the manager of Wetherspoons does perceive it to be an issue.
So where do you think the police would like them to go, then?
Out of sight.
Yeah, outside,
out of mind.
Yeah,
it's bliss for them. They don't have to think
wherever.
About.
Or they'd like to be in these different programmes, being, I don't know.
Maybe they've got a misguided sense of it's good for them. Maybe they... I don't understand, but I think maybe they do think, well, why aren't you using that? Because I would jump at the opportunity, so they fail to empathise. They've got a different point of view. They view life differently. Mm-hmm. They think everybody should want the 2.4 children, the house, the car, a career.
The long term, sort of,
And they don't see, they don't understand that some
that they're very ill. A lot of problems.
Some people are very ill, but some people just don't want...
They're offering.
And not everybody has to want that. But the police don't see... I mean, they wouldn't have joined the police if they saw it any differently, so that's...
So they're just obeying orders, and I take it the orders that are passed down, is it zero tolerance, is it?
It's zero tolerance.
Yeah, it seems to be zero tolerance. It seems to be the point where, like... we've talked to some of the lads and people on the street, and they say that there's, like, a vendetta in some ways. They even see it to the point where there's, like hit lists to get them off the streets and all that kind of thing. And
I think once one of the homeless lads have been argumentative to the police, it sticks out, and then that person is vindicated again and again and again, and then it's a vicious cycle. The police don't like that person, and that person immediately gets defensive with the police, so then it keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And I understand where the people are coming from, arguing with them. Well, why should I move? What am I doing wrong? I'm doing nothing.
This is a free country, a democratic country.
There's people who are in Wetherspoons, standing on the street, drinking, smoking, because Wetherspoons doesn't have a beer garden. So the people might, the homeless people might think, well, they're allowed to sit there and drink even.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll get a slap on the wrist, go take your beer glass inside. But it happens.
Yeah.
And the police don't particularly... stop that happening.
Yeah,
it's just because they want Preston to be clean, tidy, and not have
give it. It's to do the image of the centre
of
the town.
Yes, yes. Do in order, like they want a clinical town, don't they?
And David, which particular song would you like us to play as well on the radio?
I'd like the Clash's song "Know Your Rights."
That almost spells it out in itself.
Yeah, definitely. I think.
Do you think people do know their rights?
No, I don't, because people, whether you're on the streets or whether you're not on the streets, I think it's important that we know our rights.
This is a public solid announcement with guitar.
Many thanks to Dave and Sarah for their interview and their choice of music, which was Fugazi with Waiting Room and The Clash with the classic Know Your Rights. Now it's back to my interview with Paul. So during these four shows, you've talked to quite a few people, the public, the homeless, organisations. Can you sort of summarise how things went?
Given the nature of the subject matter, I've never ever had one person that didn't really want to be involved and didn't have something to say upon the matter.
Right.
You know, it's a very sensitive subject, and I think because it's so evident as well, because it's there, clearly visible, then people do have an opinion on it. But essentially, the opinion that most people have is one of compassion and one of understanding. Before we started, you know, I'd speak to a few people about things and stuff like that, and there was this almost conflicting evidence in a way of that lots of people would just think that they were lazy, that they were, you know, a waste of time, they were using society for their own means, they all had really nice houses, they didn't want to get a job, etc., etc. So I expected quite a few people to be quite negative about it,
right.
And it hasn't been the case.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2, the voice of the people.
But I am positive. I'm really pleased
that this country is sort of trying to do something about it, even though it's got lots of other pressures with lots of other problems about, you know, the global crisis financially and jobs and everything. The government, our government, is trying. There's some, you know, fantastic facilities in Preston to help people. But what we do need, and obviously we can't cover it in these series of programs, we may come back to it some other time, there definitely needs to be some form of open shelter for those people who are outside that loop.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And that's my conclusions on the matter, really. And thank you to everybody involved, including the homeless, you know, everybody we've speaking to, the general public and everybody, you know, because basically it's their show anyway.
I totally agree. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yes, many thanks to everyone that's taken part. Thanks for your choices of music, some dubious, some okay.
Ooh.
That's about it on this subject. As Paul says, it probably is going to raise its head again at some point. We will be looking forward to a new show, which we will be starting soon. Details to follow, so please keep listening.
Your own personal Jesus, someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares. Your own personal Jesus, someone to hear your prayers, someone who's there. Feeling unknown and you're all alone, flesh and bone, by the telephone. Lift up the receiver, I'll make you a believer. Take second best, put me to the test. Things on your chest, you need to confess. I will deliver, you know I'm a forgiver. Reach out and touch faith. Reach out and touch faith. Your own personal Jesus.
Well, that's the end of this series someone of shows. We'll be back on Saturday, 17th of October, between 4 and 6 p.m. with our brand new 2-hour slot. So keep an ear out for the voice of the people. So for now, it's bye from me, Des Butler, and bye from
Paul O'Hara.
Take us away with a song, Paul.
Time to go home, time to go home. It's the voice of the people, it's time to go home. Goodbye.